Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the global financial crisis right after this. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you anyway, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself. Everything that government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, our Fourth Amendment protects us in our persons, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect us from ourselves. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. This information is being gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, it's knowing how this information is being gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. So always keep in mind, no one knows anything about you that you have not revealed by your own hand or by your own mouth. So if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for our free general law CD package? You know, that's the place to start. It doesn't cost anything. And it's a four-hour program. It's entertaining. It's informative. It's educational. And best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. The global financial crisis began in September of 2008. That's the latest round. If we go back in history and we look at the global financial crisis, it actually began on August the 15th, 1971. And then that event of August 15th, 1971 had its roots in another global financial crisis, which was called Bretton Woods, which was hashed out up in Connecticut back in 1944. And the Bretton Woods Agreement, which was a global financial crisis, had its origin back at the founding of our Federal Reserve back in 1913, which had an origin, which started back in the collapse or the depression of 1873 and the demonetization of silver, which had an origin. And, you know, this thing goes back thousands of years, and it goes back to Mount Sinai. That's right, Mount Sinai. The origin of today's global financial crisis had its origin in the Ten Commandments given to Moses at Mount Sinai. And in the Ten Commandments, there's a statute, there's a statement, there's a law, and it says, "Thou shalt not steal." That's the problem that the world faces today. It's theft. It's the violation of that commandment that says, "Thou shalt not steal." Now, the basic law that says thou shalt not steal is supported by two statutes. And those two statutes are located in Leviticus 19, 35 and 36 and Deuteronomy 25 verses 13 through 16, where it says you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And these unjust weights and balances that we're using in our global financial system today is called paper money. Unjust weights and balances. And it's tempting to use this paper money, and before paper they were doing the same thing. They just made up coins. And they started with a coin that had an ounce of gold. It's kind of like our U.S. dollar, the old Morgan silver dollars. Those are actually a takeoff of the Spanish milled dollar. Now, the Spanish milled dollar began with 480 grains of silver. It was a bullion coin. And then, over time, they put 10% copper into the coin. So now you got 90% silver and 10% copper. Then as time went along, they started putting more and more copper into the coin until by the time America adopted the Spanish milled dollar as our unit of exchange, it only had 371.25 grains of silver and 108.25 grains of copper in it. This is called clipping coins or inflation. You know, it's a practice. It's a problem that's been going on for thousands of years. So what's going on today isn't something new. I mean, hell, this is old hat. And there's a consequence that comes from it. And the consequence is the collapse of the economic system and the loss of the property of the people who use this economic system. They end up going bankrupt. They end up losing their property. And then they have to start all over again. It's a theft is what it is. This is why we have this law that says thou shalt not steal. And the law that says thou shalt not steal is the basis of property rights. See, without that law, you couldn't own any personal private property. So the concept that God in the Bible is a socialist origin or is of socialist origins or it has a socialist agenda is totally false. Property and property rights come from the scripture. It's the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, which has its origin in ancient times also, the Babylonian mystery religion. Today, we call that Roman Catholicism. That's the system. Now, you can hang different labels on it. You know, Protestants call themselves Baptists. They're really Roman Catholics. And you can tell they practice Roman Catholicism. See, all the Protestants, except for the Seventh-day Adventists now, and a few odd splinter groups out here, they all practice Sunday. They're Baal worshippers, and they practice Sunday. And then they all practice the same basic doctrines. It's just that the Protestants don't want to recognize the Pope as the head of the church. That's their bitch in life. And so over time, Roman Catholicism has won the game. I mean, you know, if you take a look at communism and Catholicism and Mohammedanism and so on, they all have the same roots in their economics and in their religious philosophies, which go back to occult practices. They practice witchcraft and sorcery. That's the bottom line to it. And this modern system of paper money comes from the occult. It comes from witchcraft. And it's a counterfeit of the Ten Commandments. It looks good, and everybody does it. And nobody's going to change from it. Well, I say nobody, you know, for practical purposes, nobody is. And even those that are opposed to it are caught up in it, so that no man can buy or sell without the mark of the beast. And so, you know, whether we like it or not, you go into Walmart and you got to give them paper money because they're not taking gold and silver. At least last week when I was in there, they still weren't. So as a result of that, you can practice gold and silver in your personal finances, but, you know, when you get out there in the marketplace and you want to buy a new car, or you want to go out here and buy, sell, and trade, or do something, you know, they rope you into practicing Federal Reserve notes or euros or yuan or whatever it is, you know, that you're dealing in, yen, escudos. So you've got this worldwide system. Now, the worldwide system is in global financial meltdown. It's in global financial crisis. Now, the powers that be, that is your government agents and agencies out here in the news media and everybody, they're trying to put the best possible face forward on a deteriorating situation that is bad and getting worse. And ultimately, this is going to lead to war. And according to Bible prophecy, when this next war breaks out over here, it's going to be a James Dandy Wallapalooza. It's one of those events in life that you want to get about as far away from as you can get. But whether we like it or not, it's coming. And you might as well get used to the idea, and you might as well get prepared for it. Now, if you're not prepared for it right now, then you're going to suffer. But if you don't prepare for what's coming, that is, you don't do anything beyond what you've already done, which is already nothing, then it's going to be even worse. It's going to get down to where there's no food. We're going to have hyperinflation, and there's cause and effect results coming down the pike here on us. And I thought I'd cover that this week for you, because I haven't talked about finances and economics here for a while. I said, geez, let's take a look here at what's going on. So we're going to take a look at the privateer, the international forecaster, the money changer, Skousen's report. And I got a paper in here the other day, J. Richard Niemela, Niemela. Write that down, because I'm going to give you his name and number here. On August the 2nd, 2010, which as I speak now was about 3-4 months ago, August 2nd, beginning of August 2010, he wrote a paper, and it's entitled 40 Bizarre Statistics. Now, I watch the news every night. I watch the News Hour on PBS, and I watch Katie Couric, Brian Williams, and then I got this new woman on ABC over here. What's her name? I'll think of it here in a minute. They got two women now. It's on the news. And every once in a while, I tune into the Business Report. And then on Friday night, I like to watch, you know, two or three of the news programs on PBS and kind of stay abreast of what it is that the powers that be, this powers that be, PTB. You might want to write that down. It's an acronym for powers that be. And this GFC, I want to write that one down, GFC, that stands for Global Financial Crisis. And you need to get these acronyms down, because they're used interchangeably, you know, in the news reports that are coming in. And we're not getting this kind of information from the mainstream press. And it's understandable, because the mainstream press is controlled by the powers that be. And they want us to develop a mindset. And the mindset is that this global financial crisis is under control, and the governments are working their hearts out, and they're going to straighten everything out in pretty short order. The truth of the matter is, it's out of control, getting further out of control. It's going to end in war and hyperinflation. It's bad, and it's getting worse. Now, that's where reality's at. And then we have this denial mode. See, human nature comes into play. And if you're like I am, you know, you don't like bad news. I really don't like it when I read bad news. I read it, and I read a lot of it, but I don't care much for it. I really like Katie Couric, because she's a cheerleader, and she makes me feel real good after the news, because when she gets through with her 30-minute presentation, which after the ads is about a 20-minute presentation, she hasn't told me anything, and she's made me feel real good in the process, kind of like FDR and his fireside chats, you know, back during World War II and back in the Depression years. That's what I like to listen to, but my common sense tells me, well, now that sounds a little too good to be true, so maybe I better take a look at the newsletters and see what's really going on around me. Now, there's a reality out here, and there are people, you know, in institutions and banks and the people, investment groups and one thing and another, investors and so on, and there's newsletter writers, and, you know, there's people out here all over the world. And these people are on the inside. They have, you know, one foot on the outside and one foot on the inside, and they know a little bit more than I know. And so they write about that. And so if I read what they write and report about what's going on the inside, then I get a little view that's different from Katie and Brian. So I report that to you every once in a while, and then I suggest to you, all of my students, I suggest that they subscribe to one or more of these underground newsletters so that they can have a better balance on reality, you know, what's really going on out here. For instance, here in the United States, we got a big unemployment problem. The unemployment problem that's being reported here in the United States is that it's around 9.5%. That's a lie. It's 28%. 28. But it depends upon how you calculate the statistics. And there's six ways to do that, and so they pick one way, and they come up with 9.5%. And they're really not lying to you. They're just not reporting all of the facts. They're not giving you all of the story. They're just giving you 1/6 of the story, and that 1/6 of the story is exactly true. The U5 unemployment rate is, in fact, 9.5%. give or take a percentage point, it's fairly accurate. The real unemployment rate is 3 percentage points higher than it was in 1935. Now, 1925, we peaked out at 25.3%. 1935 was that big year. That's when the most people were unemployed. And then from 35 to 40, the unemployment rate dropped to 16%, which was a step in the right direction. But, 16% unemployed in 1940 was still, pretty draconian. Well, Nymela, and I guess that's the way we pronounce his name, or Nymela, J. Richard. I think if you look him up on the internet, let's see if I've got this. He's got RICNIEMELA. So I think if you were to go RICNIEMELA at earthlink.net, I think you could tune right into him. And this report now comes from August 2nd, 2010. August 2nd, 2010. 40 bizarre statistics. So let's begin with these 40 bizarre statistics, and then let's take a look and analyze this in the light of these 40 facts, and let's see where reality is here as it relates to the GFC. You remember what the GFC is now? That's the Global Financial Crisis, which was engineered by the PTB. You remember what PTB is? That's called the powers that be. So whether you call those the underground, the Illuminati, the international bankers, whatever label you hang on these guys, there's a bunch of them, and they've got an agenda. Well, most Americans still appear to be operating under the delusion that the recession will soon pass and that things will get back to normal very soon. Unfortunately, that's not anywhere close to the truth. What we are now witnessing are the early stages of the complete and total breakdown of the U.S. economic system. The U.S. government, state governments, local governments, businesses, and American consumers have collectively piled up debt that is equivalent to approximately 360% of GDP. Okay, now write this down. GDP means, let's see, what's the words here I'm looking for? Gross domestic product. GDP, gross domestic product. That's all the goods and services that we Americans buy, sell, and trade in any given year. And right now it's running around $14 trillion a year. That's the size of our economy. Biggest in the world, they tell us. Now, the real size of the GDP isn't anywhere near $14 trillion. It's more like $9 and dropping like a rock. It's $9 and dropping like a rock. Now, the numbers that you're getting out of the government are compiled by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The Labor Department, they do that. There's other agencies that get in on this act here, but basically what we're dealing with here is the Labor Department. And they give us the statistics. Now, these statistics that they're giving us are bogus. They're telling you the truth with bogus statistics. Now, let me show you about unemployment. Listen to this. Unemployment is measured by six standards. It's U1, U2, U3, U4, U5, and U6. Now, U5 measures the number of people that are drawing unemployment checks every week. It's called the U5 statistic. Now, U5 measures, if you go out and you sign up for unemployment, they'll mark you down. Hey, you went in and you signed up for unemployment. You'll be a U5 person. And as a U5 person, they will measure you for the next 13 to 26 weeks. And they'll say 9.5% of the labor force is drawing unemployment insurance, and it's remained steady now for the last year or two. But they're not telling you about the people who ran out of unemployment insurance, which is U4. That was last week. They drew their last checks, and they're not counted this week. It's just like they drop off the face of the earth. Then there's the long-term unemployed. Those are the people that have been unemployed for 100 weeks or more. That's U6. And then they've got a number here for U1, U2, and U3. And I forgot what those are. I don't have them right in front of me here. But all right, so in order to get the total for unemployed people in the country, we would have to combine U1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 in order to get the total number of unemployed people. And government isn't giving you the U1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They're just giving you U5. Once in a while, the mainstream media talks about the long-term unemployed, and Congress passes an enactment, and they just did that here recently, gave them $26 billion here to pay unemployment benefits to people that have been unemployed for 100 weeks or more. That's 2 years, 100 weeks. All right, so now with that out of the way, at no point during the Great Depression or at any other time during our history did we ever come close to such a figure of 360% of GDP. That's debt. Okay, now here's our GDP, $14 trillion, times 360%, or three times that. That's 3.60, which is $50.4 trillion. Now, that tells you what the government debt is. That's our federal government debt as a ratio to our gross domestic product is. It's 360% of GDP, which is 3.6 times $14 trillion. Okay. Now, that's not our total debt, because we've got mortgage debt and car debt and consumer debt, and we've got other debts out there. And we've got contingency liabilities like Social Security, Medicare, and veterans benefits. So there's other numbers out there that nobody's talking about. Plus the unfunded cost of Afghanistan and Iraq wars. We haven't paid a dime on those so far. We just appropriate the money and go spend it. So, with that in mind now, we are now at the highest level of debt to income that we have ever experienced here in America. And they're telling us that we're going to go further in debt. See, we're now engaged in QE2. That's called Quantitative Easing Phase 2. And we're going to spend $600 billion. That's the official number that's been released by the Federal Reserve. That's a lie. Everybody believes, this is all of the economists in the country, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, or Bales, they don't believe $600 billion is anywhere near enough. They think it's $2.5 trillion is what they're going to have to inject into the economy. And Ben Bernanke now, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, says we're going to do whatever it takes to prevent deflation. Okay, so what it's going to take to prevent deflation is $5 trillion. Five. And again, all the economists are sitting there saying, we don't think that anything less than $5 trillion is going to do it. But they've got all you people out there to contend with. And you people out there don't believe that spending all this money is the answer to the problem. And that's because you don't understand economics, and you didn't go to college, or you didn't get a degree in economics, and you don't understand Keynesian economics, and so on. And so you're a dummy. And because you're a dummy, and you don't understand, and you don't believe, so therefore they have to start off slow and easy. So they're going to announce to you, well, $600 billion. And then when the $600 billion doesn't do it, like QE1 was about 900 and some odd billion, it didn't do it. And so now $600 billion more, they're telling you that'll do it. It won't. And they all know that. And so they're gonna do it up to $2.5 trillion. But once they get the nose in the tent, it's just a short push to getting the head in. All right, so that's where that story is. Now, We have piled up the biggest mountain of debt that the world has ever seen, and now that that gigantic debt bubble is beginning to pop, as this house of cards comes crashing down, the economic pain is going to become almost unimaginable. And the reason that he's using this word unimaginable in here is because we've never faced anything. Nobody in the world, in all of history, has ever faced a debt bubble and a collapse like this one. There have been hyperinflations, and there have been debt bubbles, and they've all been bad. And the people, you know, when they come out of them, like the Weimar Republic experience of 1923 and 24 in Germany, and those people report, you know, in the 1930s and 40s and 50s, you know, how bad things were and what happened to them in that 24-month period. It was bad. Or the people in Brazil, Bolivia, you know, when they go through hyperinflation and their economies collapse, or Argentina back in 2002 and 3, remember? They report back and they tell you how bad things are. But as bad as it was in Weimar and Argentina, Bolivia and Brazil and so on, they never had a debt structure like we've got, and they've never had the problem that we're facing. It was always at a lesser scale. It's like we got burned, but we didn't get burned over our whole body. We just got our arm burned or our leg burned. So the biggest debt bubble in history has already popped. Past tense. It's a done deal. And so what our Federal Reserve is trying to do now is damage control. What we're trying to do is to keep everybody on the straight and narrow. We don't want you rioting in the streets, you know. So we're borrowing the money. We're not raising taxes. We're going to lower taxes, not raise them. And we're going to spend more money. So we're going to borrow the money and spend it. You're a bankrupt bag lady living under a bridge, and you're going down to the Lexus dealer for a test drive. And just recently, we passed this humongous trillion-dollar new health care initiative. You know, that's, you talk about insane on top of insane on top of insane. You know, that's a corker, I would say. But again, when you get into desperate straits like we are today, it takes desperate measures. And we are now engaged in activities that 50 years ago, had you made a statement like this, they would have put you in a straitjacket and put you away in an institution. If what's going on today and if what we're being told and what we're talking about today was used in a conversation in 1955, you would have been termed insane. Today we accept it as just normal. Just normal. Of course. Of course we're gonna have QE1, QE2, and then QE3. Quantitative easing. We are going to create and print money, and we're gonna print our way out of this depression, this recession. All right, now going on, he says already things are really, really, really bad out there. Unemployment is at shockingly high levels. Foreclosure and personal bankruptcies continue to set new all-time records. Businesses are being shut down at a staggering rate. More than 40 million Americans are on food stamps. And the U.S. government continues to pile up debt at blinding speed. And there is no use sugarcoating it. The U.S. economy is collapsing. And the following are 40 bizarre statistics that reveal the truth about the collapse of the U.S. economy. Okay, so now here's the stage. We've got unemployment at shockingly high levels. Even 9.5% is a shockingly high level. It's sugar-coated, and that's not the real unemployment rate, but it's at a shockingly high level. Personal bankruptcies are at historic highs. Every month, people like you and me and Joe Sixpack down the street walk in to a court somewhere and petition them to absolve us from our debts. And, of course, the people that you owe this money to have to take that in the shorts, which then causes them to go bankrupt because they can't pay their bills, which then in turn causes their suppliers to go bankrupt. And so what we've got here is a chain letter, and this chain letter Ponzi scheme is collapsing, and it's imploding, and it's affecting the next tier of creditors down the line. Now, if you think foreclosures are bad now, why, they're nowhere near what they're coming down to. Nowhere near. And it's bad now, and it's getting worse. And they're at historic highs. The foreclosure rate, historic highs. And if you don't pay your mortgage over here, well, then the bank, you know, they can't pay their bills, and then those creditors, they can't pay their bills and so on, until finally the whole house of cards comes down to everybody has lost everything. Now, there's a winner that comes out of this. There's a winner that comes out, but it's not you and it's not me. All right, so here's the 40 bizarre statistics that reveal the truth about the collapse of the U.S. economy right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package, so be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org, archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone. And they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the global financial crisis, also known as the GFC, created and caused by the PTB. That's called the powers that be. Number one, according to one shocking new survey, 28% of U.S. households, 28% of U.S. households have at least one member that is looking for a full-time job. Now, what does that tell you then about unemployment? If you go out here and knock on my door and you say, are you looking for a job? My answer would be no. If you ask my wife, she would say, nope, I'm not looking for a job, I'm booked up. If you were to ask my boy,
well, I got two of them working here now, and they would say, no, I'm not looking for a full-time job. I'm booked up. So we are one household in America. Four members in the household, which is actually two. Thor lives by himself, so I guess we'd call that two households. Well, out of those two households, four members in those two households would say to you, we are not looking for work. We are fully employed. Now, if you start knocking on doors around the community, and of course, depending upon what community you're in, up in North Dakota, they've got a 3% unemployment rate. I think in North Dakota, you'd find very few households up there that would tell you that we're looking for work. But when you get to New York City, or Los Angeles, or San Francisco, or Philadelphia, or Cleveland, or Detroit, I think you're going to find that there would be more than 28%. More than. Because nationally, when you just take all of it and lump it together, there's at least one person in 28% of the households of America that are looking for a full-time job. Now, we never had a problem like that even in 1935. 25.3% was the peak. 25.3. 1940. Unemployment, 16%. But now it's 28%. Now, again, it depends upon how you count it. And the government counts U5, and they're reporting that to you every night on the news. Unemployment remains stubbornly high at 9.5%. Well, they're not adding in U1, U2, U3, U4, and U6. They're not talking about you people out here that have been unemployed now for 100 weeks. You're not counted in that unemployment statistic, but you're just as unemployed. Now, if you go out and ask people, knock on their doors and ask them, I think that you'd get a pretty accurate report, and that's what number one report is right there. Now, it was bad in 2008. It got worse in 2009. It worsened in 2010, and it's going to be worse than it is today in 2011. How do you like that? So, you might as well get used to the idea that if you're one of those people, you know, one of the 72% that's employed, one of the 72% of households is not looking for a job. Well, then, count your blessings, and put a little bit aside, because it won't be very long until you're going to be unemployed. Now, in Argentina, they hit a peak unemployment rate down near 62% in 2003. 62%. Now, I don't know what the ultimate unemployment rate's going to be here in the country, whether it's going to hit 60% or 70 or 35 or 40, but it's going higher than 28, because that's where we're at today, and circumstances are deteriorating as I speak. All right, so there's that story. Number two, a survey found that 55% of the U.S. labor force has experienced either unemployment, a pay decrease, a reduction in hours, or an involuntary move to part-time work since the recession began. So go back to August of 2008 with the collapse of Lehman Brothers. I believe that was September of 2008. Right after the Olympics. Remember that? All right. So counting forward now from September of 2008 to September of 2009 to September of 2010. We're just in this thing a little over 2 years. And in 2 years' time, 24 months, and this is not the 3.5-year period that it takes to reach the bottom. From October of 1929 to March of 1933 is 3.5 years. It took 3.5 years to hit the bottom in the last Great Depression. We're into this now 2 years. You know, 2 years and a couple of months. 2011 is going to be worse. 2012 might even be a little worse than that. All right, so tuck it away in your heart. Now get this, 55%. So more than half of us. Now, I can say to you that my hours have not been reduced. If anything, they've been increased. And I'm not complaining about any pay decrease or any reduction in hours or any involuntary move to part-time work. But 55% of the people in the country, 55% of the U.S. labor force, has experienced unemployment, a pay decrease, a reduction in hours, or an involuntary move to part-time work since this recession began 22 months ago. Number three, there are 9.2 million Americans that are unemployed, but that are not receiving an unemployment insurance check. Okay, remember what I said a little earlier. They're reporting U5. We have 9.5% unemployment. Those are the people that are receiving an unemployment check. Now, there's another 9 million out there that aren't receiving any unemployment check, and you people aren't even being counted. How do you like that? You're not being counted. You don't have a job. You can't find a job. You need a job. Maybe you're living at home now with mom and dad again. Maybe you're living with brothers and sisters, or living under a bridge, or living in your car. All right, now you're a statistic, but you're not being counted. And that's so that the rest of us out here don't panic. And so what I'm doing here is I'm gonna hit the panic switch here. I'm gonna tell you, well, let me tell you where this is headed. Here's where it really is. So 9.2 million Americans are unemployed and not receiving an unemployment check. Number four, in America today, the average time that's needed to find a job has risen to the, let's see if I can read this here now, risen to, and it was the WWW Telegraph Company, UK, a record 35.2 weeks. I gotta decipher this because it's in code here. All right, so number four, in America today, the average time needed to find a job has risen to 35.2 weeks. Now, after you've spent this 35 weeks looking for a job, which is pushing, 9 months, you're likely to find a job, doing something that's not in your job category or description. Maybe you're a college professor and now you're driving taxi cab in Manhattan. That isn't what you are trained for. That's not what you want to do, but that's what you have to do, and it took you 35 weeks to find that job. And it doesn't pay anywhere near what you're used to or what you're worth or what your value is in ordinary times, but then that's the way life is, and that's where we're at today. Number five, according to one analysis, the United States has lost 10.5 million jobs since 2007. So just going back 36 months, we've lost 10.5 million jobs. 10.5 million jobs gone. Now, we call that outsourcing and offshoring, and there's a little story that goes with that. People who work in Silicon Valley in California, that's south of San Francisco, starting from South City to San Jose, they call that Silicon Valley. Well, there's many, many of these computer companies and software companies that are headquartered there. And they got started, back in the 70s and 80s in the early days of the computer revolution. Well, those people that work there, computer programmers and all kinds of jobs related to that, are now taking jobs in India. Yeah, they're moving from the United States to India, and where they're getting paid $60,000 to $100,000 a year here in the States. In India, they're getting paid $10,000 to $15,000. But there's a bright side to this. But they report that they live better in India on $10,000 to $15,000 a year than they do in America on $60,000 to $100,000. Taxes are less. Living costs are less. And they're doing the same work that they're doing in America. and they're prospering over there. Now, that's where the economy is headed. Now, if you want to leave Detroit, Cleveland, Philadelphia, and go to India and go to work, now, you know, you might have something going for you there. Or China, you know, or someplace else. Now, number six, the China trade surplus. China's trade surplus, much of it with the United States, climbed 140% in June compared to a year earlier. So in looking at June 2010 compared to June 2009, the trade surplus with China climbed 140%. The Chinese are taking over in the world. Get used to the idea that the Chinese and their manufacturing base are taking over. They're not number one in the world yet, but they're approaching that, and they're going to be shortly. That's going to be an economic powerhouse. And now with World War III coming, World War III, you see, out of these depressions, war always follows. Well, going back in history, you know, about as far back as we can go, that's always been the pattern in the past. Not much reason to believe that it's going to be much different in the future. Now, here's a kicker. You know the weapons that are too horrendous to use? You know, like gas and microbes and biological warfare and nuclear bombs and things like that. Well, looking back through history, you know, one time people were fighting with clubs, and then some guy invented a bow and arrow, and he could kill you from, you know, 50 or 75 feet away. And then somebody come up with the compound or crossbow. Now they could kill you 100 yards away. And then some guy comes up with gunpowder, and then that develops into artillery and one thing and another, and pretty soon we can kill more people faster. Then they come up with machine guns, you know. Now we can kill more people even faster. Then we invented airplanes. And every time we come up with one of these inventions, they tell us, oh, my God, now that we've invented the bow and arrow, think how much more prosperous we're going to be, because now we can shoot deer further away. We can shoot animals further away, and we can live better because it'll feed more people. So they tell us, you know, when they develop nuclear arms, they said, can you imagine how many Panama canals we can build, you know, with nuclear blasting powder now? You know, this is a quantum leap forward. It's like TNT over gunpowder. And it was. But, you know, since World War II, how many Panama canals have been built with nuclear technology? But now we have thousands of these nuclear weapons out there, poised and ready to annihilate mankind. Now, when we look at Bible prophecy, there's two chapters that you should write down here, Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. They'll tell you what's coming also. They're a part of Bible prophecy. So as I'm going through, here's what's going on today. Now, compare that with Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. And here's a guy that we call God. And, you know, he comes along and says, here's what I'm going to do to you guys now if you don't pay attention. I buy you books. I send you to school. You eat the covers. You don't learn anything. And then you don't pay attention to me. And so there's a result that's coming from that. So the results that we're getting, I'm up to number six, China's trade surplus. It's up 140%. What's our surplus? What's our trade like? It's deteriorating. Every month, we're exporting less and getting paid less for it. You know, what we're exporting here in the United States is I think it's $2 billion a month, about $25 billion a year. You know, something like that. And our trade surplus is around $100 billion. Well, that's about $60 billion a month, I think is what I saw last month. It used to be $100 billion a year. Now it's more like $300 billion a year, maybe more. Hey, there's a limit to this. I don't know just where this limit's going to be, but we can see it on the horizon now. can't quite tell, you know, is it 2012, 13, 14, and I don't know, but at some point in time, all of these goods that we now depend upon being imported into the United States, you know, remember the old story about the shoes? We import 99% of our shoes now. We import 60% of our petroleum, our oil. Hey, that's not good. Those petroleum exporting countries are going to cut us off, and we're going to be down to using 40%. Now, when our oil, you know, when our gasoline gets cut by 60%, that's going to impact upon your standard of living. You're going to be burning 60% less gas shortly. You're going to be wearing 99% fewer shoes shortly. That's why I'm suggesting that we pay attention to what the hell's going on around us. Now, remember, this report is J. Richard Nimella. And if you'll write this down, it's all one word. It's RICNIEMELA at earthlink.net. And you can get a copy of this report. Subject, 40 bizarre statistics. I'm going to cover all 40 of them here. I won't get them done in this program, but I'll get all 40 of them in here. This is disaster of an unimagined proportion. And when I read these numbers, you know, it sends your mind into denial. You say, my God, that can't be. Where in the hell is the president's mind? Where are the leaders in Congress? What in the hell are these people thinking about? And if you're sitting there saying, well, maybe President Obama hasn't heard this yet. Oh, my God. Talk about naivete. Now, you know, the president gets briefed every morning by the CIA. These leaders in Congress, you know, are being briefed by the people that know what the hell's going on. These numbers are government numbers. Oh, no, they're... There's no problem here with the president. He knows what the hell's going on. He knows more than I do. All I am is a crummy plumber. So if I know this, and I'm a crummy plumber, and you're a truck driver or housewife, you know, or a doctor, a dentist, or whatever it is, and you're going to your office every day, and you're treating your patients and doing your thing, and you know, trying to make ends meet. Now, when we take a look at the numbers here, take a look at the numbers. 28% of the households in America have at least one member looking for a full-time job. Where is the unemployment level, boys and girls? Just wake up and ask yourself the question. Number 7. This is what American workers must now compete against. In China, a garment worker makes approximately 86 cents an hour. In Cambodia, a garment worker makes 22 cents an hour. Now get that down. Write that down so you can tell your wife tonight, you know, when you get home. You can tell your husband over dinner tonight, hey, wait a minute. In America, when I was a kid, in North and South Carolina, we had a thriving textile industry in America. Well, in the 1960s, they began to export our textile industry to other countries. And over the years, the textile industry in this country just disappeared. And you can now see why. You see, minimum wage in the United States of America today is $7 and some change per hour. And in some places, it's more than that, but it's $7 an hour. In China, they're getting paid 86 cents an hour. And that's what you're competing against, Mr. and Mrs. American worker. And they're willing to turn out your shoes and your shirts and your pants and stuff for 86 cents an hour. And you are complaining because you're not getting paid more than minimum wage, $7 an hour. And you're saying, well, I can't make it on $7 an hour. But they can make it on 86 cents an hour. And this is why our founding fathers and our Constitution put in tariffs. Tariffs? That meant that you Chinese over there cannot use your cheap labor, manufacture your cheap shirts, and sell them in the United States at discounted prices. You have to pay a tariff, duties. Well, we took those off so that we could have free trade. Now, free trade has benefited China, it has benefited Cambodia, and it has cost America 10.5 million jobs since 2007. And that's not where the job losses began. They began back in the 1960s. And both political parties now have been telling you about free trade and globalization and NAFTA and CAFTA and WTO and so on. And you bought it. You know, you bought it. Okay, well, now here comes payoff. Here comes payback. There's a result that comes from it. And so now you have to compete with 86 cent an hour labor from China making your shirts, which is good for us because, see, over here we're buying these cheap shirts. I was in, I think it was Sears, and my wife bought, I think it was about 15 or 20 shirts for $5 a piece. Shirts that should have been $25 or $30 each, sold for $5 each, made in India. See what you're competing against? And let me tell you a little quickie here. I went into a parts store the other day. It was a hydraulics store. And I said, can you fix these four jacks? I had four 12-ton jacks that I use here on the farm. And they, you know, over time, you know, they went haywire on me. The gaskets and the seals in them are bad. And they were made in America jacks. They're old. They're probably made in the 50s and 60s or 70s, something like that. I don't know exactly. I had them rebuild about 1990. And I paid $60 a jack in 1990 to have those jacks rebuilt. Well, between 1990 and today, 20 years, these four jacks are haywire again. I take them into the hydraulic store, and I say, here, rebuild these jacks. And the guy says, okay, we'll take them in, see if we can get the parts for them. I come back 2 weeks later, he says, well, we couldn't get the parts for them, but here they are in a box. And so here they are, they're in the box, all taken apart and they're in pieces. He said, I'm terribly sorry, but we cannot get the parts to fix these jacks. I says, well, how much does it cost for a new jack? And he says, $128 each for 12-ton jacks, $128 American-made jacks. I said, okay, give me four of them. I'll take four of them right now. He said, oh, we don't have four hydraulic jacks in stock. I said, well, how many of these hydraulic jacks do you have in stock? And he said, let me look. And they looked it up, and they said, well, we don't have any, but we can order them for you, and we can get them here in about 2 weeks. All right. I said, well, I got to pay you $128 a jack. I got to pay you, and it's going to take me 2 weeks. He said, "Yeah, but you can go out here to the Chinese store. I forgot what they call that now, Chinese imports or something. And you can get them." And I did. I went out and bought four 20-ton jacks, not quite double, but 20-ton jacks for $36 each, and they had four of them in stock. So what do you think I bought? Do you believe for a moment that Americans can compete? I was willing to pay the $128 to buy American. But it's not in stock. You can't get it. So you go out here to the Chinese store, and oh yeah, we got them in stock, and they're only $36 each. Okay, now that's what we're fighting against. That's a losing battle. That war is lost. And while we're talking about lost wars, I'm lost in time. So let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. There's a signal says I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.